A day after a military takeover ended Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir's three-decade rule, thousands of people continued their protests to demand regime change in the North African Arab country. People who protested for al-Bashir's ouster are rejecting the army's coup, calling it a reproduction of the same regime. Elsewhere in North Africa, an Arab country, Algeria, is also grappling with extended anti-government demonstrations. Demonstrators there are also holding fresh protests against the appointment of a new interim president after Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who served as president for two decades, stepped down. They're demanding radical changes in Algeria's political system. In tonight's debate, we'll discuss the root causes of popular mass protests in Sudan and Algeria, the grievances people have, and the strikingly similar demands that they share. Stay with us.
The developments that are unfolding in Algeria and Sudan are, in many ways, strikingly similar. Nationwide rallies forced the removal of long-term rulers from power. In Algeria, peaceful protests began in mid-February against a civilian ruler, President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. He was in charge for two decades and sought a fifth term despite his ill health. For Algerians, that was too much. For years, they rarely saw the 82-year-old in public. But the protests were not just about Bouteflika. Those around him, the ruling elite, had to go too. That's why today, Algerians are still staging rallies, calling on Bouteflika's successor, an interim president, to resign. Algerians want a free transition to elections, and they want that to happen now. Buoyed by developments in Algeria, protests in Sudan gained momentum by demanding serious structural changes in their country's political system. Public anger against military ruler Omar al-Bashir poured onto the streets of the capital, Khartoum. Earlier this week, demonstrators reached the army headquarters and vowed to stay there until Bashir was ousted. On Thursday, the Sudanese army responded by ousting Bashir and setting up a ruling military council. The council said it would oversee a two-year transition period, leading to elections. The Sudanese are not convinced. The fear among Algerians and Sudanese is that one ruler is being replaced by another uncannily similar to the first. They have reasons to be wary. In neighboring Egypt, a popular uprising saw the replacement of one military ruler with another. In between those two transition periods in Egypt, an elected civilian government was quickly crushed by the army and brushed aside. In Algeria, some protesters accused Persian Gulf Arab countries of interfering in their internal affairs. Critics have long maintained the Persian Gulf monarchies don't like the idea of the ballot box in the region. They argue that could essentially give rise to calls for democratic and political changes in their kingdoms. A situation that their lifetime rulers despise.
Well, in tonight's debate, we've got Editor-in-Chief of the International Interest, Sami Hamdi, joining us from Tunis, and also activist and political commentator Hazem Salem, who's joining us from the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Welcome to the program, gentlemen. Let's start off with Sami Hamdi. What's behind the protests that we're seeing now in Sudan and Algeria, and what do the protesters want?
I think they're both slightly different situations. In Algeria, you have a situation whereby President Abdelaziz Bouteflika sought a fifth term, or the former president sought a fifth term. He suffered a stroke in 2013. He's been unable to communicate with the people, and he put himself forward, or rather the people around him pushed him forward in order to protect the current framework of the regime, which has allowed for much corruption, which has allowed for much stagnation with regards to development. So this generation that did not live through the 1990s civil war, let's remember that Bouteflika managed to stay in power by telling everybody that it's me or civil war, not necessarily in that way, but essentially telling the Algerians that I am stability and we need the stability so that we don't go back to civil war. The people who protested or who took to the streets are this new generation, with new aspirations. They demanded that Bouteflika resign and the army responded. Sudan, you have 30 years of sanctions. The problem in Sudan is a little bit different. You have an economic crisis, an economic issue that has come about because the U.S. has squeezed Sudan. However, this new generation have pointed their fingers at Bashir and blamed al-Bashir for this economic crisis. They believe that somehow that will bring about prosperity. The problem is, however, is that as long as Sudan remains on the list of state sponsors of terror, companies don't want to go to Sudan, they don't want to go to invest. Sudan has been involved in three wars against parties that have been internationally backed, either by Libya and Chad, either by the Ethiopia, or either by the US. As a result, it has never had the time to breathe. The people are sick and tired of this. However, they have pointed their complaints, their protests at Omar al-Bashir and put him as the lightning rod for this. However, they are now realizing that it's not necessarily the regime that is to blame for all of this crisis, but indeed a very an intentional bid by the US to squeeze the regime, to squeeze the country. These are two very different scenarios, and I do not necessarily think they can be linked to one another.
Hazem Salem in Cairo, what similarities or, as our guest in Tunis, Mr. Hamdi, sees differences do you see between the protests happening now in these two countries?
Well, the similarities are on the superficial side, like ousting two presidents. But deep inside, there are a lot of differences regarding the political structure, the connections to the international community, and the process of change in each country. In Algeria, the problem is with the French connection to the ruling regime, the French connection to the army ruling, the French connection to everything that happens from Algeria downwards into all of Africa. So that is a big challenge. And this is the thing that led to the civil war, because of the French influence that stopped a process of democratization and actually invested the so-called civil war. Sudan is different because Sudan was under actual a tremendous pressure. But still in Sudan, the question is why the Sudanese have put all their criticism against Omar al-Bashir, and they did not actually think of a different social contract in Sudan. Why this particular group of people who are more or less unhappy with the situation did not think of a new Sudan that starts with a new social contract. The path between this moment and a prosperous Sudan with democracy is much wider, and a big gap happens. But still, there is a gap of trust between the people and the ruling elite, the people and the ruling regime in both countries for two different sets of reasons.
Sami Hamdi, do these demonstrations have the potential to morph into another wind of protests for Arab and North African countries?
I think it's very easy to paint the brush that there is a new Arab Spring taking place or the like. However, I think it's worth remembering that these were instigated by certain events that have, and it's difficult. So for example, let's take Sudan, for example. These protests took place after the government decided to lift subsidies on fuel and lift subsidies on bread. And the people said this was the straw that broke the camel's back. This is the last straw. However, we have to remember that Sudan's economy is struggling not only because of sanctions, but also because the oil it was promised from South Sudan when it handed over 70% of the oil, it was promised $25 per barrel sold in South Sudan. South Sudan entered the civil war. Suddenly, no oil is being sold. No more money is going to Sudan. You can imagine the huge impact that had on the Sudanese economy, that had on the Sudanese balance sheet. So as a result, the government had very little choice but to pursue harsher means in order to secure money. The problem with Sudan is that even if you oust Omar al-Bashir, the fact that Sudan still stays on the state sponsor of terror, the US still lists it, means companies are not going to be coming to Sudan. They're not going to be coming to invest in your economy. South Sudan is still involved in a bitter war. Therefore, the oil still won't be solved. So you've ousted Omar al-Bashir, but you haven't solved the core problem with regards to your economy, which is that the US continues to impose sanctions, the US continues to back rebel groups, the US continues to allow the facilitation of weapons to these rebel groups. Let's remember that Abdul Wahid Noor is still armed in Sudan, and he's one of the biggest backer of these protests. So the reason, so Sudanese protest, I always say, comes from historical amnesia. But with regards to Algeria, the situation is quite simply that these groups that have taken control, they call them a mafia in Algeria, these various different factions, have been infighting for a long time. When Bouteflika was put forward, everybody knew what it was. It was the factions coming together, trying to agree on how to preserve the system whereby they can maintain their corruption. The Algerians have had enough. But here's the problem for Algeria now. You have Ahmed Gaid Saleh, the commander-in-chief, who has ousted Bouteflika, but now he is trying himself to try to cement his power, to cement his own authority. This is why Algerians are still on the streets. And the proof is that the government that was formed just before Bouteflika resigned, this government was formed because no government can be formed in the interim period between resignation and elections. Gate Saleh didn't choose somebody who would be accepted by the people, like Ahmed bin Bitour, like Talib Ibrahimi, like Hamrouche, like some of these other people. He chose nobody so that the anger would continue, and he chose people that he could control, that people that he would be able to manipulate later. This is why Algerians are saying to Gate Saleh, don't try it. You came and you kicked out Bouteflika, but we want elections. We want to elect our own people. Gate Saleh is almost saying, let me see what I can do. Can I manage to stay in power, or do I really have to hand over power to the people? This is why these are two very different scenarios between Sudan and Algeria.
Hazem Salem, the main protest group in Sudan, has snubbed the military's claim that it has no ambitions to hold on to power for long. The group is saying that that statement is a farce and a deception, calling instead for an immediate handover of power to a civilian transitional government. In spite of all that's happened and the removal of Omar al-Bashir by the military, it seems that the demonstrators don't trust the military at this point.
Well, there is a gap of trust, and it's huge. And other than this, the situation in Sudan has been played in a certain way where al-Bashir has cloned himself into everybody in the army and most of the party that he has. So in that case, removing al-Bashir as a person does not remove the regime or the system, and it does not give the Sudanese people other options. Actually, to hold things together, you need some center. And in order to get everybody to express, you need democracy. There is a very critical equation that needs to be played in Sudan into this. And other than that, the backing of the conference party that was backing Omar al-Bashir did not abandon him. And that makes a certain segment of the society still part of the old regime and part of the society as well. And this needs a lot of talk between the civilian groups themselves and between the army and the civilians. And still, the gap of trust is huge, and the Sudanese needs to rely on themselves on this. And if you don't talk now, you will fight tomorrow with one another, and they should be aware of that.
Sami Hamdi, we're going to go back to the issue of Algeria. The demonstrators there argue that elections, they can't be held free and fair if it's going to be under the same judicial framework and institutions as those of the Bouteflika regime. Will these demands of total change come to fruition? Or in other words, how can this notion of total change come about in Algeria?
That's a very difficult question, and I think anybody would be hard-pressed to address it, mainly because the protesters have no clear leadership. There is nobody really for the government to negotiate with. There is no leader who has come about and managed to become a lightning rod for these protests in order to lead these protesters into a new age. Even when we are looking at potential candidates to lead a transitional government, you're looking at figures from an older generation. You're looking at Zerwal, you're looking at Talib Brahimi, you're looking at Ahmed bin Bitour. These are people from a bygone age. And this shows that the fact that there is no new leadership to take forward. People know they want change, but they disagree what change they actually want. And this is the confusion that Gate Saleh is seeking to take advantage of. There is no realistic solution except elections. And there are ways to ensure that there are free and fair elections. There is this distrust. However, unless you're willing to trust Gate Saleh and allow him to form a military transitional council, there should be elections as soon as possible. This is actually very interesting in the way that Algeria is trying to push for free and fair elections, but Sudan is not. Notice the statement in Sudan of the opposition parties to the army. It was not call elections quickly. It was give us power immediately, because the parties that rode the protests in Sudan are parties that are rejected by the majority of Sudanese. They are aware that if they go to elections immediately, they will be defeated. Remember, Sudan is a conservative society. There's a reason why Islamists have lasted for so long. The communist and the liberal parties that have made those statements that you were referring to are essentially saying, we don't want Suwar al-Dhahab. Suwar al-Dhahab was a general in 1985 who ruled for 1 year and handed over power to an elected government. They said, we don't want a Suwar al-Dhahab. We don't want somebody who will hand over to elected government. We want power to be handed to us immediately, because they know if they go to the people, they will be rejected. Let us remember that it's true that there has been a military coup in Sudan. However, this notion that it is military versus about to say Sha'ab in Arabic, that it is military versus the people, is very skewed, and it is very wrong to apply to Sudan, and this will lead to very bad analysis. Because the reality is that there are still many people who are with Bashir, there are still many people who are with the army, there are still many people who reject the ideology of many of these parties that wrote the protest. The demands are legitimate. The desires of the Sudanese people are legitimate. However, now there is a dangerous power play taking place, and it remains to be seen where Sudan will go. If the military wants to do, military announced they will do parliamentary elections. They will rule for 2 years, but they will do parliamentary elections. The problem is the opposition parties or the protesters, they don't want any form of elections. They want the power to be handed over immediately. This is the crisis in Sudan, as opposed to Algeria, where they really do want free and fair elections.
Hazem Salem, the protesters specifically in Algeria accuse Western countries, some Persian Gulf countries also, of interfering in their internal affairs. Can you elaborate on those accusations for us, and what is at stake for these countries?
Well, actually, for both of them, the idea of other Islamist or pro-Islamist or even half-Islamist group emerging and coming to power is the troublesome thing. For the Gulf, they have that in mind. They don't want any form of political Islam. And for the West, they don't want that either. And they didn't allow that to continue when the FIS, the Islamic Salvation Front, came forward 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago. So in that sense, they are both on one line, and they want some secular government that is backed by the army, that is more interconnected with the West and probably with the Gulf, which is also an ally to the West. And thus, corruption will flourish more and more, and the fruits and the wealth of Algeria will continue to flow regularly into the pockets of the center in Europe and the Western Hemisphere. So that's the whole structure in Algeria. And this is particularly difficult. And the Algerians, they actually need to call for independence. And this should be connected to democracy as well. Because those who are not pro-independence, even if they come by democracy, they will have the same structure of corruption again invented in Algeria.
Sami Hamdi, your thoughts on the issue of foreign countries interfering in internal affairs of the countries like Algeria, like Sudan?
Algeria is well known. The French have a significant influence over contracts, over the way the government operates and the like. France still has not apologized for what they did in Algeria. The French believe that Algeria is a part of France. You'll see that there is a heavy, still a cultural colonialism that still takes place in much of Algeria. I think with regards to the French, their problem in Algeria today is not necessarily that they are heavily involved. The problem is they have no idea what to do. They relied on Bouteflika, and Bouteflika is now gone. They upset other factions in the Algerian government when they backed Bouteflika, and these factions are now starting to come to the fore. So Algeria is not quite sure exactly what it's supposed to be doing. Ahmed Gaid Saleh is renowned for his vehement animosity towards the French in particular. I think what's also important is Algeria now sees interference from the US, which it never used to see beforehand. The US as well are trying to play games in Algeria. However, as with always with popular protests, it is very difficult to maintain, to deal with that popular anger. The people are still in charge. The people are still pushing forward. If you want foreign interference, you should look at Sudan. What is the aim of sanctions? The aim of sanctions in Sudan is to encourage people to take to the streets to overthrow a regime. If you're in Washington and you are wondering how effective sanctions are actually, because you've seen in Iran the government is still standing, you've seen in Venezuela the government is still standing, you will see Sudan that they succeeded. They starved Sudan, they starved the economy, they split the country into two and convinced the people that it was Bashir's fault. They convinced this new generation that it was al-Bashir's fault. This is, if you're in US today, you are laughing. You are saying, at last, we finally managed to bring down the regime in Sudan via the sanctions. This is why there is a narrative in Sudan that this is a people revolt and a revolution. I say this is a 30-year project from the US that put sanctions on Sudan from when the animosity from 83 when Numeri declared Sharia, from when Sudan voted against American intervention in the Gulf War and they were punished, they were put under economic pressure, they had to introduce a new currency. 96, they imposed the full comprehensive sanctions to try to bring down the regime. The Darfur crisis took place internationally backed. The South rebels movement took place internationally backed. The oil pipelines in the east being blown up, Ethiopia backed, internationally backed. The US tried everything possible to bring down the regime. And the ironic thing, the tragedy, the horrible thing about what's happened in Sudan today, despite the fact that the demands are legitimate, the tragedy is that this was exactly what the US wanted. This was exactly what the sanctions were intended to do.
Okay.
This is exactly the ideology that sanctions were supposed to impose, and we fell for it.
All right, one last question for both you gentlemen. Mr. Azem Salem, do you think that these democratic movements have a chance at longevity in such countries, historically speaking?
Well, actually, this is part of the path where these countries will gain democracy and independence one way or the other. And it is up to the demonstrators to be more attentive, that they have to be more united and more harmonized in thoughts and in steps and in action. And they have to be putting the idea of being independent and making our own choices and making our own way forward as the basic thing. Do not rely on any external force in order to serve your cause, because you will have to pay for these external forces one way or the other, and thus you lose your cause in the end.
Sami Hamdi, same question to you. Do these democratic movements have a chance at longevity and sustaining?
They do have a chance. They always have a chance. There is always hope. However, in this world, remember, the Middle East is not like Europe, where it's free from intervention and the like. The U.S. always, for example, when the Islamists, they won in the elections after the Arab Spring, Europe's first reaction was, why didn't liberals win? Why can't we back the liberal parties? Why? How can we improve their hopes to win in elections? As long as people respect the democratic will of the people, as long as people respect, these are conservative societies, they will always lean towards parties that respect the Islamic identity of these countries. The day that Europe and the US learn that this is the reality of this population, that they grew up being taught that Islam brings the golden age and that secularism and liberalism brought 80, 90 years of oppression, destruction, establishment of theft of land and the like, as long as the US and Europe start to realize that these people in Iran, in Sudan, in Algeria, all they desire is to be left alone and to choose their own people, then they will succeed.
Okay.
However, these are areas with lot of resources. I don't know how much they will be left alone, but the people are still in the driving seat.
All right, we're out of time. Allow me to thank my guest, Editor-in-Chief of the International Interest, Sami Hamdi, joining us from Tunis, and thanks to activist and political commentator Hazem Salem joining us from the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Special thanks to you, our viewers, for staying with us here on Press TV's Debate. It's good night for now.